Some 100,000 people made a wasted journey last week on Thursday to Gatwick Airport. At least one family's here tonight who did that. A wasted journey because, of course, no flights took off during Thursday and not so many during Friday. A couple of thousand years ago, a group of wise men, magi, left somewhere in the east, whether it was Persia or Iran or Iraq or Saudi Arabia or Yemen. They took a massive journey, really, in their terms, in their day, a massive journey, a speculative journey, really, to Bethlehem. We don't know quite when they arrived. A few months, probably not. More closer, perhaps, to a couple of years after the birth of Jesus. They probably weren't there at the time that the shepherds were there. They probably didn't visit in the stable, but somewhere else. We don't know, too, quite how many they were. We talk about the three because there were three gifts, which is kind of reasonable. We don't know if there were much more than that. We don't think they were particularly kings, but rather magicians or astrologers. If you're familiar with the Bible, there's a character in the Old Testament, Daniel, who was an exile from Israel in Babylon. And he was in a sort of company, in a group of people who were the kind of predecessors to the Magi. They were wise people, people who studied all kinds of religions and ancient scrolls and tried to interpret them and signs in the earth and so on. And that's what these magi were, descended from those around the time of Daniel. And possibly Daniel, when he was there, about 600-700 years before this time, left lots of Old Testament scrolls, some of parts of the Psalms, perhaps, and some other books of the law that were left behind there in Babylon, and perhaps these magi could see them. And from them, they figured out when a star rose that something was happening. Just out of interest, some of the texts that might have pointed towards that, one of them might possibly not have been around, but possibly might. One is from Psalm 45, the other is from Isaiah 40. And if you look at those, put those together, it does talk there about kings bringing tribute, and it does even talk in Isaiah 60 about camels. So maybe there were camels. So nativity plays can still have camels in if you want. But they saw the star. They interpreted it as a king born of the Jews. And so they travel to Jerusalem. And they start to inquire, where is the king of the Jews? Clearly they decided Herod wasn't him. Herod, as Mark mentioned in his prayer, was a puppet king put in place by the Romans. He was an Edomite. He wasn't even a Jew. And he was a bit of a despot. Built great palaces and other great structures, but basically was out for his own good. And Herod asks the chief priests, that means the religious people, well, where is this Messiah supposed to be born? And they instantly, without hesitation it seems, give this textbook answer. Well, it's in Bethlehem. And they quote from another book in the Old Testament, Micah. But amazingly, they don't go there. You'd think wise men came, they'd seen a star, they ask about the king, the chief priests tell them, you think the chief priest would say, we'll come with you, we'll have a look. But they don't. And the magi start to travel towards Bethlehem. And in some way that they could figure out, the star moves with them and guides them to where Jesus, the baby or maybe the toddler, something under 2 years old, was living. That was a long journey. That was a lot of hassle. Was it worth it? They were relentless in their pursuit of the king. They traveled far and wide. They inquired. They persisted until they found him. And when they found him, they worshipped him. See, for them, it was a journey worth making. It was a very worthwhile journey because they get to see the king of the Jews, who they worship as the king of the earth. But the question for all of us here this evening is it worth it for you? Is it worth it for me? When you peel away all the wrappings about Christmas and you get to the truth, is it worth it? Is the birth of Jesus worth inquiring about? Is it worth studying? Is it worth considering? Is the baby Jesus, is the man Jesus worth worshipping? Is he worthy? Is he worthy of your interest? Is he worthy of your belief? Is he worthy of your love? Is he worthy of your devotion? Is he worthy of anything from you? And I want to suggest to you this evening that he's worth it. First of all, because it's true. Sorry, there's some people in Gatwick. First of all, because it's true. You know, there's a debate on the internet. I hadn't realized. I was at a lunch on Tuesday, and we were talking about Christmas movies, and someone mentioned Die Hard. And there was a little bit of a discussion, went backwards and forwards. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie? Sorry, did I say Christian just now? Anyway, Christmas. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie? And I looked on the internet and discovered there is a battle raging about whether Die Hard is actually a Christmas movie or not. But whether it is or not, I'm not so much sure that you'd want Die Hard to be true. But there's a lot of Christmas movies that you would want to be true. There's a lot of those kind of formulaic Christmas movies which either have Father Christmas or an elf or something else in, or just a family story which always seems to resolve okay in the end. You get a misbehaving child or parent or disaster or something happens, but it all kind of resolves and they're all happy and they're all kind of sitting around enjoying turkey or whatever at the end and all kind of reunited. And sometimes at Christmas, you want those movies to be true. You kind of watch them, even though you know they're not true, because you wish they were true. And maybe you wish the Christmas story was true. Maybe you like the sound of the carols and the traditions and the readings. You don't believe it's true, but you wish it was. You've relegated it to kind of King Arthur and other legends and myths and Father Christmas and so on, but you really want it to be true because as you hear the words, you think, this is quite comforting. This is quite interesting. I wish it was true. And I want to say to you that the wise men's journey was worth it. Your journey to discover about Jesus is worth it. First of all, because it's true. Let me give you a few reasons, but there's many more. A few reasons why we can be confident that what we're reading about, the readings we had tonight and the rest of the Bible is true. First of all, the stories about Jesus are written by eyewitnesses, people who actually saw what happened. You know, when the disciples started telling people about Jesus, his life and his death and his resurrection, they reported it as eyewitnesses. They didn't say, here's an interesting story I heard. Here's some ancient scrolls I discovered. What they said was, we saw him. We saw all about it. We investigated. We spoke to Mary and we discovered all about the birth stuff. And we saw him in life. We were eyewitnesses to everything that happened. Everyone involved at the start of the church, at the start of there being Christians who gather together in churches, everyone told their story as an eyewitness. And everyone recognized that the Gospels, what we call the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and John, and the other writings about Jesus, everybody recognized that they were writings of people who'd seen with their own eyes and touched and handled what had actually happened. Second reason why you can be confident it's true is that we have what they wrote. They wrote it very soon after things happened, and we have what they wrote. You can be certain that when you read these books, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and John, and the other books, that what you're reading right now is what they wrote, what they intended you to read. We've got manuscripts, bits of paper, that are within 30 or 40 years of the actual writing of these Gospels and other books of the Bible. So really close. And there's about 6,000 New Testament manuscripts. That is by thousands and thousands more than any other recorded historical event. There are so many manuscripts of the Bible, and they all cohere. They're all put together and tell the same story. And what they wrote was written down like real history is written. scholars, clever people, people much cleverer than me, tell us that when they read the Gospels, it reads like real history. It doesn't read like mythology. There are people who've studied loads and loads of different mythological texts all around the world, and they look at the Gospels and say, this isn't one of them. This is people writing history, like people who were eyewitnesses who wanted to record it, because they were people who were eyewitnesses who wanted to record it. And it wasn't only coherent because it makes sense as history, it's coherent because they all say the same thing about the coming of a promised king who showed by lots of signs and wonders who he was, who had some disciples, who lived a good life, who died, who rose again, who instructed his followers to speak about him. And these people who wrote these things, these people who spoke about these things, were willing to die for it. That's why we can also know that it was definitely true. It's thought that all the main followers of Jesus, the 12 disciples and the new one that was appointed because of Judas, that all of them, apart from John, were killed because they kept saying, "We're eyewitnesses. We really did see Jesus." And they died because these events are true. So I just want to put it to you that it's worth the journey that the wise men took. It's worth the journey that you could take to finding Jesus because it's true. Okay, for a moment then, just allow that to be true for you, that these stories are true. There's a next important question, though, to say, well, okay, so even if it's true, is it relevant? Now, I know physically there might be some consequence of this, but just suppose the moon was made of cheese. Would it have great consequences for you? It may be true. Or if it was made of sandstone, or if it was made of clay, it would hardly make a difference to your life. It wouldn't be really very relevant truth. And take some other distant star and what gases it had surrounding it, and you think, this is totally irrelevant to me, whether it's true or not. And maybe you think that the stories about Jesus are like that. You might engage for a few moments and say, well, maybe it's true, maybe it's not true, but you're not that interested because it doesn't seem very relevant to you. You're living your life, you're in the 21st century, you have all your worries and fears, and you have all your excitements and interests, and you've got all this stuff going on in your life, and you think, This 2,000-year-old story, it's not really relevant to me. It doesn't have much to say to me. I want to say to you secondly and just quickly that it's not only true, but it's also relevant. And we get something of an indication of it being relevant by just thinking about the gifts that the Magi bring. First of all, as you saw already, they brought gold. One of the gifts they brought was gold. And gold shows that the baby was a king. It's a sign of a special, of a precious person. It's quite an unusual gift, really. In fact, all three of them are very unusual gifts. You know, what do you buy for a baby or a toddler? Looking after my granddaughter, who's under two recently, Eliza. And you realize how completely dependent on you they are. And they deserve love and care and looking after and watching and stopping them climbing up the stairs, which I sometimes do. But they don't really deserve lavish gifts because they wouldn't really appreciate them and they're not really very age appropriate. And although we love them, particularly our own relatives, they don't deserve our worship. They don't deserve us bowing down and offering our gifts as though they were greater than us. It would seem strange and weird, and it must have been. The wise men walking in, and this precious gift of gold, a rare, really expensive thing, something that an under two wouldn't really appreciate. And yet, it was appropriate because the gold showed that this baby really was a king. In fact, it showed that he really was the king. It's really ironic that Herod is so anxious to know where the baby was, and he takes steps to try and get rid of all the toddlers, to try and get rid of him. He claims he wants to worship him, but actually he wants to put him out of his life. And the chief priests, as I said already, astonishingly, don't try and discover more about him. But the wise men realize he really is the king. Yeah, he is a rival to our power, but that's a good thing. Yeah, he is going to change our worldview entirely, but that's a good thing. And the fact that Jesus is king is relevant because in the depths of your soul, you want a king. There's a hunger, there's a longing for a good king who will rule over you right. Because you know that all your efforts to rule your own life will fail, that they're doomed. It's a failed project. You know that trusting leaders of any kind, whether it's political leaders or social leaders in your social groups, that putting your trust in anyone to rule you is a failed project. And so you need a king. You need a king who has all the power and all the authority over everything. You need a king who's good, who's a good ruler, who'll always do what is right and fair and good, and who will ultimately be a victorious king, and a king who will gather a group of people together and will look after them forever and give them what they need. You want that kind of king. You do want that kind of king, and Jesus is that kind of king, and the Magi saw that, and so they give him some gold. He's the king who deserves your worship. And even if you think you don't want a king, everybody in this room will one day acknowledge that he is the king. And I don't want any of you to do that with such deep pain in your heart, with such regret and remorse to say, oh, if only... Because you will one day say, yeah, Jesus is king. And you'll either say it with great joy or you'll say it with great fear. And I want you to say it with great joy because tonight you want to say, Jesus is king. That's the first thing. Second gift is frankincense. I don't know what your favorite smell or perfume is. I'm very boring. I've had something pretty similar for most of my adult life that I use for spraying myself with. Do you know what your other half's favorite perfume is? Have you bought some of it? It's not too late. Bit of shopping time tomorrow. Frankincense was smelly stuff. It was sometimes used in the temple to fumigate the offerings. There's a quote here from a book in the Old Testament, Leviticus, where it talks about how some of the frankincense is used as part of a grain offering, a burnt offering, where you burn something up to kind of worship God in that way. And what the frankincense shows is that Jesus is going to live the life that you can't live. We already said he was a king, but more than that, he's going to live the life that you can't live. He's going to dedicate his life to the service of his Father. He's going to show that it's possible to be happy and complete and really cool serving the Father God. He's going to show what it is to be a real human being. He's going to worship with the whole of his life. He's going to worship with his prayers. He's going to worship as he rests. He's going to worship as he works. He's going to worship as he speaks. He's going to worship as he serves. He's going to worship as he obeys perfectly the law of God. He's going to live a life of worship, which is such a fragrant smell to God. And why is that relevant to you? Because he lives the life that you can't live, that you don't want to live. He lives the life of perfect obedience to God and perfect worship to God that you're not living. He's an amazing man who does what you can't do. He worships God perfectly. Third gift is myrrh. Frankincense had a kind of sweet smell. Myrrh had a very bitter taste. Still used today, apparently, in toothpaste and mouthwash and makeup. It was used a bit in the temple in the Old Testament, but here it almost certainly has a bit more of a darker significance. It's not so much about worship, but it's the fact that it's something that was often used to embalm the dead because of its preserving properties. And as no doubt you know, Jesus dies. And when he dies, in amongst the spices that embalm his dead body is this substance, this spice, myrrh. In a way, it's the most poignant, the most shocking of all the gifts that's given by the king, all three of the gifts that are given by the wise men to the King Jesus. Because it represents death. It represents the fact that he's going to die. He's going to taste something bitter and painful. Much more humiliating, in fact, than his birth. We think about his humble birth. But much more humiliating than that is his humble death. As he will die a bitter, agonizing death, as having lived the perfect life that you could not live, he then dies the death that you deserve to die. Because all of us, because of our rejection of God, because of our pushing him off the throne of our lives and making ourselves king, all of us deserve the wrath of God to fall on us, but actually, Jesus offers for it to fall on him. That's the myrrh, that's the death that he dies. And he tastes the wrath of God for us. And so what we read about in the Christmas stories and in the rest of the Bible is true, but it's also completely relevant to you. It's relevant to you because you need a king who will rule over you with wisdom and justice, and Jesus is that king who has all power. It's relevant to you because Jesus lives the life that you don't live, and it's relevant to you because Jesus died the death that you deserve to die. And we want to be like the wise men tonight, don't we? We want to be like the wise men in their relentless pursuit of the truth and to find the king and to find the king and to recognize his mission and to, with some degree of understanding, say, Jesus, I see you as the king. Jesus, I see you as the perfect example of a man. Jesus, I see you as the one who died in my place. So, Jesus, I worship you. I bow down before you. I say, you are great. You are worthy. You are worth it. Will you do that? Will you be like the wise men? Come bow at the feet of Jesus, even though it's a kind of humiliating thing because the stories are not much in a way, and it's 2,000 years ago, but you're bowing before the king. And you're bowing before the one who can live the life that you can't live. And you're bowing before the one who dies the death that you deserve to die and offers you eternal life in his kingdom. He's worth all your interest. He's worth all your love. He's worth all your service. He's worth all your worship. I want you to find him. I want you to worship him this Christmas.